What up, what up? It's the return of the preseason podcast of the year, Hip Hop Sports Report, live coming at you on a Saturday night, September 20th, 2014. I guess I probably shouldn't say live coming at you because it's a podcast and so we tape it and then you listen to it later. So technically it ain't really live, but it's live though. The podcast is live though. Anyway, you know what I mean. Anyway, big show this evening, as usual. Got a jam-packed podcast this evening. Gonna touch on a lot of different subjects. We're gonna bring on, once again, our good friend Andy Roberts will be joining the show this evening. You remember him from the March Madness tournament. He was on the show. We told him we was gonna have him back on about this time of year. And here we are, fulfilling that commitment and coming through in that on that promise to bring Andy back to the show. We're going to talk a lot about some Major League Baseball stuff, and we're going to talk a lot about college football this evening. So we've been kind of neglecting those areas, and we gotta cover all our bases here on the podcast. Make sure you hit us up twitter.com at HHS Report. We're on Facebook as well, facebook.com/HHS Report, and the website itself, you probably figured it out by now, hiphopsportsreport.com. And again, we're on iTunes, y'all, so make sure y'all subscribe. You get all the podcasts coming straight into your earbuds. All you got to do is subscribe to the podcast, like the podcast, rate it, comment on it, all of that stuff. We see it, and any feedback we get is much appreciated. So thank you for all those who have been supporting the podcast to this point. And thank you for those who have been supporting the website. Obviously, we've got a lot of stuff up on the site. Talked a little bit about the BET Hip Hop Awards on the site. Talked a little bit about the summer in hip hop, who's kind of won and lost in the summer of hip hop, things of that nature. And obviously, we had our big NFL picks podcast, and that happened last time we hollered at y'all. So some of my picks not going so hot right now. I can't even front on it. It's just the way it is. But it's a long season, so go check all that out on the website again, hiphopsportsreport.com. And did I introduce myself? I'm your man, Jay Hicks. I don't think I've mentioned that yet. This is what I do. I do hip hop and sports. It's what I talk about. It's what I love to talk about, what I love to discuss, and things of that nature. So I started this podcast a couple years ago, started the podcast almost a year ago. We're coming up on an anniversary for that. In fact, we actually neglected the anniversary of the website on the podcast and on the site, and I forgot about that, and I'm ashamed of that. It's my hidden shame, but it's not hidden any longer. I'm telling y'all right now, I was a little upset about that with myself that I forgot to mention that. That was back in August, and so now here we are, September. We're now into year three of hiphopsportsreport.com, if you can believe that. And so, and the podcast has been going on for almost a year, so things are looking up, and we're just adding more and more stuff to the site. I'm tinkering with stuff, thinking of different ways to brand and expand, and all that, man. So thank you, everybody who's been supporting us. Thank you for all the Twitter followers. Shout out to all of y'all, and anybody who's been reading some of the work that we put up there. I really appreciate it, especially the most recent article about the worst week ever in sports. And even that just doesn't seem to be going anywhere. We'll kind of touch on that to a degree a little bit later on. Yeah, so before we get into our sports talk for the evening, I wanted to touch on some hip-hop stuff, man. Obviously, we got a lot of articles up on the site right now about hip-hop, as I mentioned. Talking about the summer in hip-hop. The summer's just now winding down. I think the last day of summer is probably like tomorrow or something like that. So as tragic as that is, we talk about that on the site. And we also talked about Biggie and Tupac sharing some similarities with the date, September 13th. There's relevance to both of them for that day. We touch on that. And then also, we did a piece on the BET Hip Hop Awards for 2014. That's going to be aired on October 14th, actually. And we just did a quick piece, Hot 16, on just 16 topics about the awards and the nominees that jumped out at me. So go ahead and check that out on the site. But there's also the ciphers. The ciphers is a big deal, y'all. It's a big part of what makes the BET Hip Hop Awards dope. And for those of you who are unaware, ciphers is just guys, rappers getting together with a DJ, and it's just four or five rappers just there, and they just spit rhymes. And it's not anything that they have previously recorded. Typically, it's a freestyle that they had just written for this occasion. Some guys do it straight off the top of their head, and it's the essence of hip hop at its very core is the cipher, and so it's. It's a really cool part of the show, and they do a lot of them. They do about four or five of them throughout the course of the award show. They're taped beforehand and they run them during the show, but it's the part that everybody looks forward to. And so BET, they announce the nominees and then they do a separate announcement for who's going to be on the list for the ciphers. And let me tell you, I'm going to read off the list of some of the cipher participants that jump out at me. Let me just say this, on the whole, the list of ciphers participants, not all that impressive, BET, not that impressive this year. And we've seen in the past where they bring out different guys, you know, sometimes they bring out guys from different eras. I thought the one they did several years ago where they had Ice Cube and Rev Run rhyming with their sons was really dope. They put gimmicks, they tend to put clicks together, they do the Grand Hustle Cypher, the TDE Cypher, the, you know, whatever. Whatever crews that roll together, they put them together in a group and they let them get their rhymes off, you know what I'm saying? This year, I know we had a Cypher scheduled for Wiz Khalifa's Click, you know, Taylor Gang or whatever. Wiz Khalifa, Juicy J's on that one. Looking forward to hearing that. Aside from that, though, not a lot of big names. Not a lot of big names, period. With the exception of Juicy and Wiz, to be perfectly honest. Lil Mama made it? Oh my goodness. I didn't even peep that. Troy Ave, he's kind of a name. He's on it. David Banner's in it. Tretch has got some, you know, he's got some years in the game, obviously. So I don't know if people are going to be anxious to hear him spit after, you know, his little time on couples therapy or whatever. But, you know, we got Tretch in the building. Remy Ma, fresh out. She was one of our winners from the winners and losers of the summer in hip-hop. So Remy Ma is going to get a 16 in, it looks like. So that's cool. But the one, and Papoose, her husband for that matter, or her husband-to-be or whatever. The one name that jumps out at me, though, the most out of any name on this list. And there's a lot of battle rappers on here as well. You know, guys like Loaded Lux, T-Rex, Conceited, Goods, to name a few. There's a lot of guys with some underground buzz, like Logic and Kevin Gates, you know, hearing stuff about Vic Mensa, hearing a lot of stuff about these guys. I'm anxious to hear them too. So those are three guys I'm keeping an eye on for sure. I'm keeping an eye on Kevin Gates, keeping an eye on Vic Mensa, and I'm keeping an eye on Logic. But the one person that I'm most excited about hearing, and we talked about him on our Ear to the Street segment a little while ago, y'all, on the podcast, King Los. This dude can rhyme. This dude can rap his ass off. And I am looking forward to hearing King Los at the BET Hip Hop Awards. I have a feeling, I have not heard everything from all these artists that are listed in the ciphers. A lot of these, they bring in rappers from overseas and stuff, you know, England and stuff like that. They do that like every year as well. So you can expect to hear, you know, some MCs from some different parts of the world. I haven't heard all these MCs before, but the ones that I have heard, of the ones that I've heard, and the guys that are listed here, there's nobody that I'm more excited about hearing than King Los. I think King Los is going to have the best, he's going to have the best freestyle session out of anybody that they got on this lineup. So I'm most excited to hear him. But in general, I just feel like that, you know, this is going to be a down year for the BET Hip Hop Awards, because it's kind of, 2014 has been a down year for hip hop, y'all. I've said it on the site numerous times. I talked about it in the article. There wasn't really a lot of buzz this summer. You had Drake dropping songs here and there. Kendrick, we're waiting on Kendrick's new record to come out any day now. But, you know, he's got a single coming, that is. But, there hasn't been a lot in the world of hip hop since last October when the last award show took place. So between last October and this October, it really ain't a lot happened in hip-hop, musically. You know what I'm saying? So because of that, not a lot of super dope performers coming to the show. It doesn't appear as though. I know it looks like Snoop Dogg, Common, J Electronica, Bobby Shmurda are all supposed to perform at the show. But aside from that, you know, you don't have a lot of guys trying to get in on the ciphers. This is going to be a down year. So my expectations for this year's BET Hip Hop Awards are low, y'all. They're low from the top. But the person that I'm most excited about hearing definitely is King Los, y'all. So make sure y'all check him out. And I think it's time to talk a little baseball, man. Let's bring on our special guest for the evening. Joining us once again on the preseason podcast of the year, actually on the Your Ad Here hotline calling in this evening, is Mr. Andy Roberts. Welcome back to the show. And, glad to hear from you once again. Glad everything's going good with you. Everything is going good with you, right?
Last I checked.
Hopefully that was sometime today. You took some took a little inventory at some point today. That's good.
I most certainly did.
Fantastic. Fantastic, man. Let's jump right into it, man. Let's talk some baseball, man. We never talked a lot of baseball here on the podcast, man, but I definitely follow baseball, and you're one of the biggest baseball fans I know, so I figured you would be the right person to have back on the show. You know, we got a pennant race, man. We got a pennant race on our hands. We got the American League and the National League obviously coming down to the wire. I figured we start in the junior circuit and just kind of... I just had a few thoughts. I jotted them down. I said, let me run them by Andy and see what he has to say about any of this stuff. So, just looking at the standings in the American League, obviously the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim jump right out at you, and I'm still not accustomed to saying the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, but whatever. 95-59 right now, the best record in all of baseball. Are they the best team? I mean, they seem like the team to beat. I mean, I haven't checked the odds in Vegas or anything like that, but it seems like they are the team to beat, and they have it all. They got the ace at the top of the staff. They got, matter of fact, they have the two dominant starting pitchers at the top of the rotation, which I feel like is a necessity for any team looking to make a deep run in the postseason. And their lineup is just outrageous. We know they can score a ton of runs. Is anybody beating the Angels, do you think, or are they just the hands down the favorite right now? And is anybody in baseball better than Mike Trout?
Well, if we've learned anything from baseball playoffs the last decade or so, it's that you never know who's beating whom, but I definitely think the Angels are coming in with the best chance. To answer your second question, no one's been better than Mike Trout since he came into the league, and I'm still trying to figure out how that happened, But he's pretty spectacular. But no, the Angels are definitely the favorite. They got some solid pitching. I know they got Houston Street at the deadline, and it seems like he's been fantastic ever since he showed up there. And Jared Weaver in the rotation. I'm sure Weaver's not the best pitcher, but he's certainly the one I know the best. And Pujols having a bit of a resurgence as well. So they're going to be a tough out for anybody, and especially in the AL where. I mean, other than the Orioles, who I'm not, I think I played a game for the Orioles at some point with all the injuries they've had. And I don't know. And no one else in the AL seems to want to make the playoffs, so I don't know who else is going to beat them. But I definitely like the Angels to come out of that, side of the bracket, if you will.
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask you about the Orioles, too. That's funny because the O's, and shout out to my good buddy Rob Minner. He's a huge O's fan, so I know he's pretty happy with the season they've had, but. They just will not die, and they've had all these injuries. I think they lost their catcher, I think, for a significant portion of the year, if not the entire season. Manny Machado went down middle of the season, and obviously that's a big loss. They've just had tons of injuries, you know, aside from, like, Adam Jones. I don't even know who else is, like, a constant in the lineup that's really doing it. But what is it about this team that makes them special? Like, why is it that the O's are – why are they in it? Because, I mean, if you look at – the Angels on paper and you look at the Orioles on paper, there's no comparison. So what is it about the Orioles that has them neck and neck with the Angels as far as the best record in all of baseball?
You know, I have no idea. Like you said, they've had so many injuries. Nelson Cruz, I think, has been their best player. I think he's still leading the majors in home runs. But you mean you've got Chris Davis, who has had a horrible, horrible season, and then he got popped for greenies on top of that, so he can't even come back until the ALCS from the suspension he got hit with. Matt Wieters, the catcher you mentioned, he had Tommy John surgery, I think, screwed up his arm, so he's done for the season. Other than that, J.J. Hardy, who's pretty good. Steve Pierce, who I only know because I have been eyeing him in my fantasy baseball league that we just talked about off the show. I had him on my roster the last couple of weeks, and he's one of those guys that just comes out of nowhere and hits. And he's got like 15 home runs, I think, even though he's only had 200 plate appearances this season. But the Orioles on paper, not an imposing lineup, but this is the second time in 3 years they've done this. If you remember 2012, they didn't have that strong a team on paper either, but they got the wild card and won the wild card game. So, Buck Showalter must be putting something in the water. I don't know, but they're pretty spectacular the way they've overcome everything that they've had to deal with.
was crazy because that team, they have a lot of character, that Baltimore team, because if you remember, as you pointed out, the 2012 team, that team, I think they like led the majors in ninth inning wins or comeback wins or something like that. Like every game that they won seemed to come down to the wire, and they pulled it out like 70% of the time. It was ridiculous. And now this year, they have all this adversity, all these injuries that you mentioned, and I forgot to mention Nelson Cruz has been a spectacular pickup for them and gave them some pop in the middle of the lineup. But so you mentioned Chris Davis obviously getting suspended also, which we actually mentioned on the website this past week when you know we had an article about the worst week in sports, and as you mentioned, Chris Davis getting popped, like you said, for drugs or whatever. I guess he's like the new 2014 Brady Anderson, because he had like 50 home runs last year, and then now he's, like you said, he's batting like 210 on the season, and he's just having a horrendous year all the way around. And he's like the Josh Hamilton for the Orioles, I guess. So, because I think Josh Hamilton's a bum, personally. I never liked that dude. Ever since I saw him just strike out with ridiculous levels of, you know, just strike out a ridiculous amount of times in the playoffs and in the World Series, I'm like, I'm done with this dude. He's all hype. But yeah, man, I don't know what it is. The Orioles, they, like you said, they have some kind of character about them, and they keep battling back through this adversity. They might be the real deal. Sticking in the AL East for a second, what the hell happened to the Red Sox? How do you win the World Series and then just bottom out like they have? They're not. What is this, the Florida Marlins? What's going on here, Andy?
You know, I have no earthly idea, because they didn't change a whole lot, if I recall, from their roster the year over year. So there was really no, I mean, it's not like they were coming into the season being like, this is going to be rebuilding year, we're going to start over. I mean, they brought back most of the same crew. I think pitching probably hurt them. I think offense, really, if I remember correctly, is really been their problem. And Poppy obviously has been great again, but other than him, it's not been consistent from anybody. I know Dustin Pedroia has fallen off significantly. He's basically a single center now. That probably didn't help. But yeah, I don't know what happened to them. I did like their trade to get Yoenis Cespedes at the deadline as part of their way to try and turn this around quickly, like they did when they made that giant salary dump trade with LA 2 years ago when they were terrible as well. I liked that move to get Cespedes and boost their offense back up, and he's been good for them. But yeah, they had a rough first couple months, but they're the Red Sox. You can't kill them. I'm sure they'll be back next year.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I mean, you just don't see championship teams fall that hard that fast, in baseball especially. Like, baseball is one of those sports where the good teams tend to stay good for quite a while. And, you know, football, they turn around really quickly. Baseball is not really like that. The good teams, I mean, by and large, tend to stay good year after year after year. This was just a nightmare season from the start with the Red Sox. And I had the Cespedes-John Lester trade in my notes. I don't know if that was like a huge shakeup that they were just trying to, I think Lester was causing some issues in the clubhouse. They wanted to get rid of him. And, you know, Cespedes was going to provide a little pop in their lineup as well. But it just didn't work. And to that end, on the Oakland side of things, Oakland hit the skids after the All-Star break, and within like the last month or so, they've really kind of hit the tank, man. I don't know what happened to them. I mean, they're still in the playoff hunt. Don't get me wrong. They can still slide into a wild card spot, but they got a lot of teams to contend with, like Seattle's breathing down their neck, and obviously they're looking up at the Angels. Are you a believer in Moneyball, Andy? Do you think Moneyball really works, or do you think it's just a facade? Like, because here's my thing, man. Like the idea is to win the championship. Like, I thought that was the whole goal of the whole thing. Like, I don't understand this whole penny pinching thing. And you trade these guys before they sign their giant contracts. You trade into Boston or New York, and then you get back a bunch of minor leaguers, and then you replenish, and then you put them back in the filter, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're constantly bringing guys up through the minors, and that's great. But young players don't win you championships. And so if you're Oakland, if you're an Oakland fan, it's like, are you rocking with Billy Bean at this point after all these years and all these good teams and no championships? What do you think?
I'm totally in. Like I mentioned earlier, the baseball playoffs are a complete crapshoot. There's really no rhyme or reason to anyone winning the championship any given year. So your goal is to create teams as often as possible that can get into the dance, basically, to use the March Madness analogy. And I don't know how Billy Bean does it. I think he's got like some kind of magical crystal ball or something that he can, you know, get guys like Brandon Moss off the scrap heap and turn them into studs. But But I'm totally a buyer in Moneyball. I can't say I'm totally shocked that they went off the skids. I knew, obviously, they had the best team by far in the game until they made that deal for Samardzija and then added Lester. I felt like Lester might have been one too many additions. Obviously, he's been great for them, but they didn't have that great an offense to begin with, and then you trade your most consistent performer in Cespedes, and I wasn't a big fan of that move, and even less so now, but I don't think that was responsible solely for the thing. I think they had a lot of guys that, like I mentioned, Moss, and they had a bunch of other guys like that that were playing over their heads, and it was never going to last. So they'll probably still make it, although it's not – they will probably still make it because they're up 5 games on the Yankees and Indians. I've got standings here in front of me. So they won't fall out most likely, but it's a bummer that they made all those all-in moves and they're still going to get stuck in that coin flip wild card game. You know, you never wanted to see that. And I really like Oakland's philosophy. Like the world of baseball is not fair, basically. I think I'm paraphrasing from the Moneyball era, but the big market clubs make more money from their local TV deals. They make more money off attendance. The A's have neither of those things because they don't have a big following and their stadium's dumb, so they can't charge hefty ticket prices. So they have to win the way they have to win. I think revenue sharing has helped that a lot of late. It's made it possible for teams like that to compete a little bit more, but those advantages are never going to go away. And Oakland has dealt with them masterfully. Unfortunately, the karma gods don't seem to agree. They're not throwing the A's any bones. So they'll be playing in the wild card game. And personally, of course, as a big Jeff Samardzija fan from his days with Notre Dame and with the Cubs, I'll be rooting for the A's. But I don't like their chances very much, to be honest.
Yeah, I had actually forgotten about the Samardzija deal. That was a big deal. And they really did kind of go all in, a lot more so than they have in years past. And again, you know, I don't know if call it old school, call it whatever, but I've always just been a proponent that, you know, you got to have pitching. You got to have starting pitching if you're going to advance in the playoffs. Now, I mean, that's not a new theory, or that's nothing new. I'm not shaking up the world with that announcement. But, you bring in Lester and you bring in Samardzija to what they already had there, and it seemed like that was could have been a good move. But maybe now, like you said, maybe it's too many cooks in the kitchen. I don't really know. But it hasn't really panned out for them coming down the stretch. And it's funny about their stadium. Their stadium is an absolute dump. You look no further than all the they're still sharing the stadium with the Raiders, and then they have all this ridiculous foul territory at their at their ballpark. Like, they have more foul territory than any other stadium in all of baseball. And I guess, let me ask you this, because you mentioned the wild card. Are you a fan of the new wild card system? It's been in place for a couple of years now, where like they have the one game playoff and stuff like that. And let me just tell you this real quick. You know, you love the Cubs. I love the Cleveland Indians, and I grew up loving the Indians and stuff. You know, when they had those great teams in the mid '90s, and that's when I first kind of fell in love with baseball. But the Indians have been trying to get into the playoffs the last few years, and they were unsuccessful. Then they finally broke through and they made it to the wild card game last year, and there was such a celebration when they made it to the I was blown away by the amount of celebrating that they, I mean, they brought out the plastic wrap and they plastic wrapped the whole clubhouse. They're spraying champagne. They got T-shirts and ball caps talking about 2013 playoffs. And I'm just sitting there like, am I the only person that thinks this is ridiculous? You didn't make the playoffs. As far as I'm concerned, if you're not in a series, you did not make the playoffs. You made the one-game playoff. And then if you win that, then you go to the playoffs. You go to the real playoffs. If you just get to this one ball game, you know, your starter comes out and he gets shelled in the first 3 innings, and the whole season goes up in smoke, and all that celebrating and stuff was for nothing. And I felt like that. I mean, even though that's customary in baseball to celebrate when you win a division and when you win a round in the playoffs and when you go to the World Series. I mean, after each round they do it, and I understand all that. But for the Indians and for all the teams that made the wild card game to celebrate as if they made the actual playoffs or if they were going to the World Series, something like that, I thought it was ridiculous. I couldn't get over that. And I think I may have even written a post about it last year. Like, The Indians are celebrating a little too hard to have just made the wild card game. And what happened? They got rocked in the wild card game. So, Andy, are you a fan of this new system? It seems like that Major League Baseball is trying to manufacture some more interest come playoff time so they don't just keep losing out to the NFL every day. Do you like the new system, or would you rather see it go back to the old format?
Well, you sort of asked two different questions there. I think it's ridiculous, the celebration with every round. I think you limit the champagne celebrations to clinching a division, winning a playoff series, and go from there. There's just one too many champagne celebrations. You could have, I think, if I remember correctly, you can have potentially maybe 5 champagne celebrations in like 3 weeks' time. That's too much champagne. It'll go to your head. You're going to get drunk. It's not going to go well. But the other question, I am a fan of the new system. I did not like the old system where, you know, the wild card team could get in there, get into a hot streak. I'm beating this point to the ground, but the playoffs are a crapshoot. It really doesn't matter who's playing whom, because the worst team in baseball is still going to beat the best team probably 1.5 to 2 out of 5 games on an average basis. So it really doesn't matter. So at that point, you want to help the best teams advance as much as possible. So that's why I am a fan of the wild card one gamer. You get these guys out of the way. You handicap them by having them forced to throw their starting pitcher, their best one, right off the top. And then you go into the regular playoffs. So I am a fan of that system. Not the champagne celebrating when you get there. Of course, I'll probably be singing a different tune next year, the year after, when the Cubs play in the wild card game and lose, and I'll come right back on this podcast and rant about the evil system. But for now, I like it.
Oh man, you a little faith in the Cubbies, man. I mean, not that they've earned it or anything, but still. Speaking of the Cubs, let's jump to the National League real quick. When you listen to the media and stuff talk about the National League, it really sounds like it's a 2-team race between the Dodgers and the Nationals. Let people tell it, and those are two very good teams, and they have like the best record in the league. So I understand all that. Here's my thing, and I know you know where I'm going with this, but there's two teams in the National League that aren't named the Dodgers and the Nationals that I can't get away from when I look at the National League and I think, okay, who's going to make this run? And it is a crapshoot, but just when I look at sports, I've always tended to gravitate towards the teams that have done it before, or because you can just trust them more. And that doesn't even mean that, you know, they're the best team always, is always the team with the most experience, because that's not necessarily the case. Yeah, and to their credit, you know, a team doesn't have that experience until they get there the first time. So, and I get all that too. But I look at the Giants and I look at the Cardinals, and I know you know a lot about the St. Louis Cardinals. I don't know too many people that hate many things more than you hate the St. Louis Cardinals. But when I look at the Cardinals and look at the Giants and I look at those rotations and I look at the managers, and I'm just like, these teams know how to get it done. Baseball, the National League messed up and let those two teams sneak into it again. And everybody's talking Dodgers and Nationals, and I'm still looking at the Giants and Cardinals. What do you think?
I'm right there with you. You don't have to tell any diehard Chicago Cubs fan about the evils of St. Louis and their playoff devil magic or whatever it is that they do. We've been over this, but in 2006, they won 83 regular season games, but because the NL Central was terrible that year, they won the division. They ended up winning the World Series. 2011, St. Louis had made the greatest playoff regular season comeback of all time, rallying to pass Atlanta for the wild card. They end up winning the World Series. You don't need to, St. Louis, if they're in the playoffs, is the automatic NL favorite in my mind, regardless of how good they might be or whether teams are better than they are or whatever. They have something, and maybe it's because they don't care about any other sport in St. Louis, but I don't know. But I certainly would rule them out. They're, I think, on track right now to face the Dodgers in round one. They're the number three. Yeah, they're the number three, and the Dodgers right now are the number two. So, I mean, terrific pitching matchups all the way around in that one. Wainwright, Kershaw, Waka, whoever, Granke. I mean, they got terrific pitching matchups up and down the line. And my money's always on St. Louis. I hate to say it, but they just win. I don't know. I'd tell you this, though. I don't watch St. Louis games. Like you mentioned, not many people hate things as much as I hate St. Louis. I literally don't watch a pitch of their games. I can't stand it. I much prefer to just see the result and not try to envision how, you know, what whatever nonsense happened that enabled them to win. Because in my Cubs fan head, every time they win a game, it's nonsense. But to answer your point, St. Louis, San Francisco, even-numbered years. They won the World Series the last two even-numbered years. They'll be a force, certainly, too, but they had to get past the Nationals. But I'm taking St. Louis until they prove me wrong, and I know they did last year, but I'm proving them, or well, they lost to Boston in the World Series. But I'm going to take them out of the NL until they start washing out. So, yeah, right now, St. Louis, Anaheim, my World Series.
Yeah, I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, my cousin, Vince Hicks, we had him on the podcast before. He says he picks the Spurs and the Patriots every year. Every year. It doesn't even matter. And you can easily do the same thing with the Cardinals because they're that good. They're the Spurs of Major League Baseball. They just win repeatedly. And, you know, they had great players in the past, you know, or very good players like, you know, Jim Edmonds in the past. These guys were key cogs in the team and they leave and then they're still good. And then they you know, they lose the cornerstone of the franchise, Albert Pujols. He's the whole franchise. They lose him, and they're still good. And then they lose Carlos Beltran. Beltran's gone, right? He's in New York. They lost him, and they're still good. Like it just doesn't matter, you know. So it's just kind of ridiculous how they just consistently stay up there. Let me ask you this: the rank these starting rotations for me: Nationals, Giants, Dodgers, Cardinals, 1-4. Rank those rotations.
Oh man, that's tough. I put the Dodgers first just because of Kershaw. He's so much better than everybody else. It seems like Grinke's really solid too. I think they've got that Hyunjin Ryu. He's pretty good. Nationals and Cardinals, maybe 2A and 2B. The Nationals have Strasburg and Zimmerman and Roark. Cardinals have Wainwright and Lance Lynn and Waka. I guess I put the Nationals 2 and the Cardinals 3. And that, I mean, you can't do much better as a top 3 than Kershaw, Greinke, Ryu, or Strasburg, Zimmerman, Roark. Giants, I would put 4. It seems like, I know Matt Cain's had his struggles this year. I know they've moved Tim Lincecum to the bullpen. They're sort of managing to patchwork together a decent rotation, but I don't think they've got the horses this year. Their pitchers just haven't. They're doing fine, but I don't think they're gonna, you know, be able to man up, if you will, and do it in the playoffs. The guys sort of going downhill. I think a lot of guys are past their primes now at this point. So I go there. Dodgers, Nationals, Cardinals, Giants.
I wouldn't be surprised though with the Giants, man. Just again based on the experience thing and just Tim Lincecum. You know, that dude, I have so much respect for that guy just off of what he's accomplished in his career. With the no-hitters and the Cy Youngs and the World Series, it's like, I think he has 2 of each. And I don't know too many guys ever in baseball has 2 or more of each of those things. I'm sure there's some, but, I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling when you think about it. And so, if they ratchet it up for the playoffs, that would not shock me. Let's put it like that. You mentioned Strasburg earlier. We remember Strasburg a few years ago. He was the hot name in baseball. And then he comes in and then messes up his arm, has Tommy John. Now he's back and he's still great. Do you think he has what it takes to carry a team throughout a postseason run and, you know, pitch on 3 days rest when necessary and come out the bullpen for game 7 if necessary, that kind of stuff? Do you think he can handle that kind of workload?
I think he can. I don't know if you'll never know until you see him do it, whether he can stand up to it and perform well. But I certainly think he's capable. He's, you know, remember 2 years ago they shut him down as part of an innings limit and because they were afraid of a recurrence of the injury that got him the Tommy John to start with, and that he didn't want that. You know, he wanted to keep pitching, and I think he's definitely got the temperament to do it. It's just a matter of whether his body will let him. I mean, he hasn't pitched under the bright lights of October, so. We'll certainly find out when they, presumably right now, is the number one they would play the wild card winner. So and that would be either San Francisco or Pittsburgh. So either one would be terrific matchups. And I would like to see him perform well. I felt bad for him that the Nationals yanked him down, you know, sort of against his will and some sort of nebulous concern for his health when you never know with pitchers.
Two-part question. should Clayton Kershaw be the National League MVP? And do you believe in giving starting pitchers MVP awards?
Yes and yes. I think this is one of those years where a pitcher can get it. I think it's, I'm generally not a fan of it, but if there's no clear position player option, if no one's really standing up to take it, and then there's a pitcher that's so clearly better than the others, as Kershaw is, except for, with the exception of Wainwright and maybe one or two others, there's no one even close to the level of Kershaw. I think it's okay if those two conditions are met, and this is certainly one of those years. I think Kershaw definitely deserves it. Especially, I mean, the Giants are, Dodgers, I should say, are only one game up on the Giants right now in the division. You know, the Kershaw's pitched how many games? 20 or some? You know, sub him out for some piece of garbage for two of those games, and the Dodgers are playing in the wild card game.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. That's definitely a good way to look at it. So you already said that your World Series is the Angels and the Cardinals, correct?
Yes.
And do you have a winner?
I think I'd take the Angels. I mean, they are the best team. It's kind of a weak pick, but they are the best team. They have been certainly since July and most of the season. I mean, they were the second best team when Oakland was the best team, so they've been pretty fantastic all year. I find it hard to believe that they could manage to lose 4 out of 7, so I'll take the Angels.
Hey, man, there's nothing wrong with that pick. I mean, especially if it's accurate, there's nothing wrong with that, and they have proven to be the best team to this point. I'm a little surprised that the Tigers haven't stepped up a little bit more. I feel like maybe the Tigers' window is closed. You know, they were right there so many years, and they just never got over the hump, and now, like, Verlander kind of fell off. They got nude photos on the internet, you know what I'm saying? It just ain't happening this year. I don't know. We'll close with this on Major League Baseball. Your thoughts on Derek Jeter real quick.
You know, great player. Played shortstop for the Yankees for 20 years. Put up Hall of Fame numbers. Yeah, gotta respect what he's done. You know, he's terrible this year, but, you know, he's also 40 years old playing shortstop. You know, that in itself is rare enough. So, you know, he's had a great career, and it's a shame that it's not going to end with a playoff berth, because it'd be nice to see him in October one more time. But he's had a good run, and he'll have his number retired and be in the Hall of Fame and you know, have his pick of the ladies in New York for the rest of his life, basically. So I think he'll be all right.
Yeah, if there's one guy that I think is going to be all right, it's Derek Jeter. I have more respect for Jeter than just about any baseball player that I've ever watched. I mean, I'm not that old, so I don't go back that far. But, I mean, just in the time that I've been watching baseball, I mean, Derek Jeter, man, that guy wins. He made plays on defense and offense. He set the tone in the clubhouse. He set the tone in front of the cameras with the media. He set the tone on the field with his play, specifically in crunch time. He's won, what, 4 or 5 world championships. He got robbed of the MVP award one year, I think, when they gave it to Justin Morneau. I mean, he's just the consummate professional playing in the one of the premier positions in all of sports, shortstop for the New York Yankees. I mean, that's a pretty big deal, and nobody has done it with more class, and nobody has shown as much grit and determination on the diamond as Derek Jeter. So, especially during the steroid era and all that stuff, you never saw him get mixed up in any of that mess. Playing for the Steinbrenners, you can imagine that probably drives you nuts too. And even still, he was the one constant throughout the whole thing, him and Rivera as well. So shout out to my man, Derek Jeter. And Derek Jeter gives gift baskets to ladies the night after they smash, and he sends them home on the Walk of Shame. Woo! That is why Derek Jeter is a legend.
Like finding feathers on a house cat.
Let me take y'all somewhere else right now.
Searching for a needle in a haystack.
That nigga got zoned out with me, man.
Don't be scared.
I zoned out.
Take them left to center.
Zone out with shit. That nigga should twist himself real tight right here. Zone out with you, boy. You don't smoke, grab you something to drink, mix it up right. You don't smoke a drink, man. Just light up the incense, fuck it. Close your eyes, vibe with a nigga. I want y'all to really hear me. I speak through music, I reach you dudes. We can get deeper in the dirt than cliches. I refuse to lose, I peep you creeps 3 months in advance. I see right through you, Judas. The man that I am, and damn, you don't know. The harder you go at me, the harder I flow. Let's do this.
I'm just a mirror reflecting your image. The minute you switch up your face, I pick up the pace.
It's nothing to
cool hammers for my waist. We can clap at this amateur pace. If that's what's cracking, or we can play this on all matting. Can you even fathom not having a fear in the world? I'm cool in my afterlife if I'm reading these chapters right. Please, what have you? I breeze through Matthews. Bleed if I have you. You cowards die a thousand deaths. Fake fucks face down on your housing steps. Are y'all even getting this message? I ain't being aggressive, but if you testing my life, then shit, I gotta answer. Gotta cut off the cancer, youngin', pull your pants up. You getting too big for your bridges. You fucking with a dude that did it with digits. Breathing's a privilege, don't you know? When you defeat it, won't you though? Throwing the towel, I'm better with vowels. I'm a man of principle, damn near invincible. In my own mind, now that my soul's aligned. Didn't know before, now my role's defined. To take hold of control of what's mine, come and get me. Come and take my life, you coming with me. Come and try to take me for granted, I take you off this planet. Damn it, man, this is a gift from God. This ain't happenstance, and your arms are too short to box. Plus, we knuckle up unorthodox. You can't take me off my grind, you get off my cop. What you thought is the rock? Back in the mix of the scuffle, since 86, I was sick with the hustle. Get a couple of chicks to touch you. Featherweight fucker, don't ever hate on the brothers.
Just playing with you niggas, I'ma stop now. I ain't got to sell another record in my life.
The Blueprint 2, baby. See y'all in November.
Oh, shit.
Let's talk a little college football now. College football, obviously, it's going on right now as we speak. I have West Virginia and Oklahoma on right now as I'm taping this. West Virginia's up on the Sooners. Shout out to my cousin Mo. She loves her Sooners. She graduated from them and or from there and down in Norman. And she was clowning me because my Bowling Green Falcons lost 1-0 today to the Wisconsin Badgers. But whatever. I'm gonna get to that in a little bit. Just not that game specifically, but there's a larger point that I'm gonna touch on. But let's start with Florida State, man, because they're the reigning champs, right? And they're playing tonight in primetime against Clemson. And Jameis Winston ain't playing. And here's the crazy part. He was playing like 24 hours ago. He was supposed to be playing, and then all of a sudden, he's supposed to play the second half because he got suspended for jumping up on the tabletops in the union and yelling something that, you know, I could say on the podcast, but I'm not. although I do find some humor in it, but I'm not going to say it. You can Google it. And now we have Jameis Winston getting suspended for the whole game. At first, they were said he's out for half the game, and then they suspended him for the whole game. Florida State just changed their mind. I don't like that, personally. I don't like that they just changed their mind like that. I felt like they should have stuck with the initial punishment that they had. Granted, he's kind of a repeat offender, Jameis is, but he didn't break any laws. He didn't commit any crimes this time around. It was just a foolish, childish, sophomoric thing to do, and that's just what he did. But my issue with it beyond that is I feel like this is just runoff from the whole week that was in the NFL. And you saw all these professional football teams in all sorts of hot water for various reasons, as we touched on the website. Go check it out, hiphopsportsreport.com. And now Florida State feels like, well, we have the number one team in the country. We have the number one Heisman Trophy winning player in the country. We're going to hold ourselves up to this standard. And so now we're going to renege on our initial punishment. And now you're going to have to sit out the whole game. And I didn't really feel like that was fair. What did you make of that whole situation, Andy?
I don't know. I thought it was kind of stupid. I mean, I do think that if you're going to suspend someone for something, you don't do it for a half. Suspend them for the freaking game, for crying out loud. Don't half mass it, if the to pardon my French. But Jameis saying giving out his particular brand of sexual advice wasn't probably very smart. I mean, yeah, obviously anyone who follows college football knows he's got a bit of a past in that area, and that we don't need to dredge up. But you know, I don't know. He came across as likable to me last year when this whole stuff was going on, but it's becoming increasingly clear that he's pretty much just an idiot with the talent of coming across likable. I don't really know what to make of the kid. He's like a worse version of Johnny Manziel. I mean, after Jameis, people were going to be dying for someone to just have the desire to just go out and drink at clubs and make it rain compared to what Jameis has been doing. But, I really hope this kid figures it out and stops acting like a fool. I mean, I know we're all idiots in college. I certainly was an idiot in college, but when you're the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback of the defending national champion, you need to know not to jump up on a table and yell out an obscene phrase, especially when you have a past with that exact obscene phrase. So, but I am glad that they suspended him for a game, because if you're going to suspend someone, it should be for a game. They're suspending for half, but you're used to the SEC doing that. That's kind of a running joke, really, with them, that they suspend people for halves or quarters. Suspend them for a game or don't suspend them. It's, you know, so crap or get off the pot, if you will. But they did do it, and, you know, hopefully it sends a message and he stops acting a fool.
It's clear Jameis didn't think that went through when he went ahead and did that. But I will say that, and I agree with you about suspending him. If you're going to suspend somebody, suspend him for a full game. Don't suspend him for a half. And as you may recall, or some of the listeners may recall, A&M did that with Johnny Manziel against Rice at the beginning of last season. They suspended him for that first half of that first game. And it was met with some criticism. And so I think that, coupled with what happened in the NFL, made Florida State change their mind. I don't have a problem with them suspending him for a game if they were going to suspend him for a game initially. My beef with it is the fact that they changed their mind and went back on it. The fact that they suspended him for a year, and then, or excuse me, for a half, and then nothing happened, right? And then all of a sudden they just up and decided to suspend him for the whole game. What happened? What changed? They're just giving him the public pressure. I just thought that was a little bizarre. So that was my whole thing. But I agree with you that, you know, suspending a guy for a half is kind of cheesy, and it is half-assed, quite literally, is what it is. Let's jump to the SEC real quick, because everybody loves the SEC, but me, apparently. I don't hate the SEC, y'all. I mean, I really don't. Sometimes you hear me throw shots on Twitter. I threw one earlier today, as a matter of fact. I don't hate the SEC. I just think the SEC is kind of overrated. And you can be the best and be overrated. I think both things can be true. They're not mutually exclusive. So just because you win a bunch of national championships, I mean, that means you're very good at the top. But that doesn't mean that the entire conference is necessarily so great. But they give the voters and the rankers, they give, and the commentators, they give the SEC the benefit of the doubt all the time. I don't like the fact that none of these teams play any defense. None of these teams in the SEC play any defense. But I had a revelation today, Andy. Nobody in college football plays any defense. And that was what I was getting to before about Bowling Green in Wisconsin. Bowling Green never played defense. As long as, you know, when I went there and even before, they never played defense. So I'm not shocked that they gave up 66 points or whatever it was. But nobody's playing defense. I mean, Georgia just ran up 66 points today. I mean, you saw Alabama and Florida play a good game. But Bama scored 42 points on Florida. And Florida put up like 28 or 35 or whatever it was. Like, every game is a shootout, and it's not just the SEC anymore. It seems like it's everywhere in college football. Am I just crazy to think, I mean, or is college football going to correct this, or is this just a sign of the time, and it's just the way it is now, there's no more defense, and we might as well be playing flag football?
I think it's a fluke. This seems like one of those years where maybe everybody stinks. I think to quote one of my favorite podcasts, the Solid Verbal College Football Podcast, and that's a free plug for them, but you know, they said everybody stinks in the last week's show, and to some extent, I think there's a grain of truth in that. I mean, you haven't seen anyone really step up and grab the mantle of the best team so far. I mean, you have Florida State. Even when they had Jameis, they struggled a little with Oklahoma State. Alabama struggled a little with West Virginia. No one's really done it yet. No one's sent a message that, you know, we're the team to beat yet, and that's probably a function of the schedule, too, to some extent. You know, not many teams have played a team that could send that message effectively. So we'll see. But I think it's a fluke about the defense thing. I think about as much defense has been played this year as usual, but we're just noticing the high scores more. You didn't even mention East Carolina dropping 70 on North Carolina today. I don't know what happened there, but I think it'll come back around and we'll see a regular, season of offense and defense. The SEC again, this year doesn't look like it's going to be. In 2011, they had the defense, and ever since then, it doesn't seem like they really have. But we'll see. You know, we haven't even started conference play for most of these teams, so a lot could just still change.
2011 seems like a lifetime ago, though. That's the crazy part. And it seems like other teams are mimicking the SEC, because everybody loves the SEC, so everybody wants to be like them. So now you have teams like Baylor, right? And Baylor scores 75 points a game now. And Bryce Petty, everybody wants to throw him in the Heisman Trophy discussion, and he gets hurt, and then the backup comes in and does the exact same thing that Bryce Petty was doing. It's just like, it has nothing to do with the players anymore. It's all about the systems and the coaching, it seems like. And then if you go out west to the Pac-12, which I believe is pretty a pretty damn good conference that doesn't get enough just due, is the Pac-12. But you see teams running up scores out there too, and it's just like, I don't understand it, man. It's just, there appears to be no defense. Everybody's playing out of the shotgun 98% of the time. Nobody plays under center unless you're in the Big Ten. And even most of the teams in the Big Ten don't even play under center anymore. And I feel like, to a large degree, it's hurting these players that are transitioning into the NFL, specifically quarterbacks, because none of them are playing in anything remotely close to a pro-style offense. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I think it is. I also think pros are starting to become a little more like college. I mean, you've seen what, to bring up my own team here, Carolina Panther quarterback Cam Newton is sort of transitioning into a pro-style quarterback over the last few years. His first couple of years, he was essentially running the same kind of spread option stuff that Auburn runs. And now he's gotten into it a little bit more where he's transitioned. But I think the NFL is going to get to a point where, and they should have done this a long time ago, in my opinion, you tailor the system to what you've got. You know, you've got a guy like Cam Newton, play to his strengths. Don't try and shoehorn him into a pro-style thing. Same with Johnny Manziel on your team, the Browns. If the time comes where he's the starting quarterback, do what Johnny Manziel did in Texas A&M. I mean, it can't be that hard. These NFL guys are smart. They can adapt to different systems. I mean, Lord knows they watch enough tape. Get these guys into a system that will benefit them, rather than having their guys benefit the system. And I think actually college is sort of a worse offender of that right now than the NFL. They're sort of, well, you see all these coaches who can't win unless they got the right players for their system. I think, you know, you take the players and put them in a system that will succeed.
My one rebuttal to that would be, well, I guess it really only works out in the NFL if you stumble across a coach like Chip Kelly, like Nick Foles just walks in and he's got Chip Kelly there, and it works. You know what I mean? It works on a professional level. But I don't know. You know, I guess my one rebuttal would be that these pro guys are stubborn, man. Like, these guys, I mean, a lot of guys do come from college and then they transition to the pros, but a lot of these guys are like NFL lifers and they never dabbled in college football or anything like that. And they're going to be stubborn to adapt to that change. I think that's kind of what, you know, I don't know. That's just a thought. But it seems like not, because we've seen a lot of college coaches not succeed in the NFL. And so that would be my one thought. I don't know, maybe I just hate college football now. It's just no the lack of defense is just appalling to me, and maybe it's a Justin thing and not a college football thing. Maybe I need to get with the times. I don't know. And speaking of which, the Big Ten, what's going on with the Big Ten, man? I kind of agree with you and the guys at the ESPN podcast there. I think everybody stinks this year. I mean, like, the Big Ten certainly stinks. You had Ohio State take an L to Virginia Tech a week or two back. In Columbus, Virginia Tech turns around and loses to a community college. They're not even in the top 25 anymore, Virginia Tech. So, is there any hope for the Big Ten? I think Penn State and Nebraska, I think, are the only two teams that are undefeated still right now. And we're only like 3 weeks into the season. Is there any hope for this conference at all?
This year, probably not. You mentioned the two undefeated teams. Neither of them are very good. Nebraska almost lost to McNeese State, for crying out loud.
Exactly.
But in the long term, I think the Big Ten's going to be fine. The problem, or not the problem, I should say, the issue with these conferences is that you're only ever as good as your flagship programs. And, you know, the SEC back in the mid to late 90s and early 2000s wasn't all that good. And it was largely because Alabama, probably their flagship program, I think you'd say, wasn't very good. They had a string of bad coaches. They bring in Nick Saban later on. And they've got Les Miles at LSU, and now they've got, you know, and now they're succeeding, and now they're, you know, the best conference. I think the same thing is probably true of the Big Ten. You know, Michigan and Ohio State, of course, drive the bus for the Big Ten. And whenever they're not good, the whole rest of the conference doesn't look as good because those other teams just aren't going to be able to get the same kind of talent, with rare exception. So, I think it comes down to Michigan and Ohio State need to get better. And unfortunately, as a Ball State alum, that means Michigan needs to get rid of Brady Hoke. And Ohio State, of course, lost Braxton Miller. Who knows where they'd be if he were playing. But I think once Michigan, Ohio State are good again, the rest of the Big Ten will look good by extension. It's the same thing over in the Pac-12. You know, they were bad when USC was bad, but now USC is good most of the time. So the rest of the conference looks good. So it comes down to, you mentioned how the SEC winning the championship all the time for a while there was proof only that they were as good at the top. Well, it's sort of the same thing with these conferences. You're only going to be as good as your flagship program. And when your flagship program is down, then the rest of the conference is going to look worse by extension.
I think that's an excellent observation, and I couldn't agree with you more. I do think Ohio State would have beaten Virginia Tech if Braxton Miller's out there too. And Michigan hasn't been very good for quite a long time, to be quite honest. Speaking of Michigan, I'm going to give you 60 seconds, and this is going to be difficult, but I'm challenging you right here on the preseason podcast of the year to hold it to 60 seconds because we don't have a ton of time left. But your thoughts on the Michigan-Notre Dame rivalry ending and whatever it was Brady Hoke had to say about the Irish. Go.
Well, I'll try and make this quick. Of course, the quote was the chickening out thing. I think if anyone does a little research on the history of the Michigan-Notre Dame rivalry, they'll know that Michigan was doing the chickening out long before Notre Dame was. It's a whole big thing with Michigan's leadership at the time, back in the 1910s and 1940s, and no one wants to hear about the past anyway, so I'll leave all that out. You can read it if you want, but let's just say, historically speaking, Notre Dame owes Michigan a few more chickening outs before they're even up. But I'll say this. It's a bummer that they're not playing anymore because I love to hate Michigan. But on the other hand, I have no issue with leaving them off the schedule because Michigan has always been better off having Notre Dame on the schedule than the reverse. And I think that will be proven true over the next few years, especially if Michigan can't get another good coach after Brady Hoke.
Well said. Well said. We'll leave it at that. and we'll let the public decide, and they can take sides on the Michigan-Notre Dame beef. What I do know is that Notre Dame has supposedly signed up to play the Buckeyes. Not anytime soon. I think it's a few years down the line still, but that'll be fun. I think we all, you know, would like to see that. And personally, I would still love to see Notre Dame join the conference, and I would love to see Notre Dame join the Big Ten. But if they haven't done it yet, they're probably never going to. But I would much rather have the Irish in the Big Ten where they belong, other than Maryland and Rutgers and Nebraska and whoever else, Blue Mountain State, whoever else they let in to the Big Ten these days, I'm over that. But the playoff is this year, and that's the big difference in college football. We finally got a playoff. Everybody clamored for a playoff for I don't even know how many years. BCS gets the heave-ho. We have a playoff in place. It's 4-team playoff. And it doesn't seem like people are paying enough attention to that. I feel like everybody's forgotten that there's a playoff this year. Maybe it's just me, but give me the four teams that you think might end up there. And I know it's early yet. We touched on that. It's very early to tell. And nobody appears to be that good. I don't even think Bama is that good. I mean, Bama looks very beatable. Florida State looks very beatable. And as long as Jameis continues to make these questionable decisions, they're extremely beatable. But give me the teams that you think could make it in there. And personally, I would hope that there's no more than two SEC teams in that Final Four, but who do you think has a good shot?
Well, there definitely won't be more than two SEC teams. I am going to plug Alabama in there. I wasn't going to, but I did see some of the game against Florida today, and I tell you what, this Blake Sims, I don't know why they were even bothering with the quarterback competition, because this Blake Sims is throwing darts everywhere. And he looked terrific. They've got skill position talent, a ridiculous amount of it all across the board. And the thing about Alabama, and this is a tribute to Nick Saban, they always get better as the season goes along. And I think West Virginia and Florida missed their chance. And Bama, I don't think Bama plays another good team or a team that can beat them, I would say, until I think they have Ole Miss in mid-October. Maybe they have A&M in that area too. But by then they're going to be rolling, and I think Bama's going to make the playoff. It's really hard to say on anyone else. I know everyone is penciling in Oregon out of the Pac-12, and they've been penciling in Florida State. It's there's one thing we know in college football. It's that once you think you know something, you don't know anything. And I think at least one of those two teams, probably both of them, will end up losing to somebody and getting bounced out. So I would stop short of making a prediction because that will just make me look like an idiot. I think Bama's going to be in there, and I think probably another SEC team, a Pac-12 team, and a what's the other conference I'm trying to think of? Not the Big 12.
ACC?
ACC. I think there will be an ACC team in there, whether it be Florida State or somebody else. Well, maybe not. You know, the ACC hasn't been very good. This is exactly why I didn't want to make a prediction. I'm sounding stupid right now. I'll say Alabama and three other teams, because really no one, like I said, no one has stepped up yet, and I would caution anyone from just going with the preseason favorites, because that never happens in college football, and that's one of the great things about the game.
I won't hold you to any predictions, and you're right. You call me out for even asking you to say something like that. I won't even hold that against you. Bama actually plays Ole Miss next week on the road. That should be an interesting game.
Is it next week? Oh, well, yeah, that'll be a tough one, but I do think if they get past that one, they're probably going to be set, because like I said, they just get better as the season goes along, and Blake Sims looks terrific.
Alabama also plays at home versus A&M, and then at home against Auburn in the Iron Bowl, and they also play at LSU November 8th. Well, the cool thing about this college football season is that, you know, everybody, the argument against the playoff for all these years was that it made the regular season that much more valuable, because you could not lose a game. And if you lost one game, or especially if you lost two games, you were screwed and you were not winning the national championship. Well, I don't think that that's much different now with the four-team playoff, because four teams, and even if they expanded to, you know, eight or something like that, it could happen. But with four teams, I think that there's still a premium on winning every single game, because if you lose at the end of the season, if you're Alabama, you're Oregon, and I think Oregon's going to be there in the end, for what it's worth. I do think Alabama's probably going to be one of the four, and Oregon will be. But if you're Oregon and you lose at the end of the season to Stanford or somebody, or USC or somebody, it's not going to look good, and you're going to have a harder case to try to get into that Final Four, because there's going to be some teams that lost in September and October that are going to be peaking in November, and you know how that goes. I don't think that's going to change. And I don't know if you have any quick Heisman thoughts, anybody that jumps out at you. I don't even know. I mean, I shouldn't even ask you that either, because, I mean, it's just the same thing. Like, nobody's playing in conference yet. Everybody's running up 500 yards a game. You know, we got Kenny Trill doing his thing. We got whoever else, Amari Cooper from Bama. That kid, man, listen, you were talking about Blake Sims. Cooper had about 175 yards at the start of the third quarter receiving the day. I don't know if he's going to win the Heisman or be in New York in December. I'm just saying, he was balling out today, and he's a pretty damn good football player. So I don't know who's going to be there at the Heisman Trophy at the end. Probably Mariota and Bryce Petty, probably the usual suspects. I'm partial to Todd Gurley. I'm a Gurley man. I'm not afraid to say it. And that's my guy, Todd Gurley. So I don't know if he'll get there. I feel like running backs don't really win the Heisman anymore. Maybe I could be wrong. I have to go back and think when was the last one to do it. I guess Reggie Bush did it. I don't know who the last one to do it was before him, but you know, who knows? Maybe it could happen. Any final thoughts on anything that we've discussed tonight? Anything else you want to get off your chest, Andy? Thank you for joining us this evening.
Yeah, last running back, by the way, Mark Ingram, to win the Heisman in 2009. Heisman has become player of the flavor of the week contest. I think in 2012, if people had heard of Johnny Manziel at the start of the year and then had his stink bombs against LSU in Florida, he wouldn't have won the Heisman. But because no one had heard of him yet, by the time he got Alabama and had that game, of course, that was behind him and no one paid attention to it anymore. So I think you're gonna see every year in the Heisman now people coming out of nowhere. Jameis last year was an exception because he was great all year. But final thoughts, I don't have really many. I love talking sports with anyone I can, so... I love coming on here, and it was good talking to you.
Shout out to Twitter real quick, Andy.
Twitter, at @aroberts_WLB. I don't tweet a lot about personal stuff or sports there. I would also suggest following a joint Twitter account that my friend and I have. I tweet a lot about sports on that account, so to see. It's @the_junkies. I would... if you want to hear a lot about sports from me, you'll go there.
That sounds like a move. I'm headed to Twitter right now to hit that up. Thanks for joining the show tonight, Andy. Have a good night.
All right.
There you have it. Andy Roberts joining the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast once again. Thank you all for listening this evening. I'm going to enjoy the rest of my evening. Watch a little more college football. Chill at the crib. It's what I do, man. It's married life. It's what you do. You just sit at the crib, watch football, and eat pizza, man. That's just how it goes a lot of times. Thank y'all for listening, man. Hit up the website, hiphopsportsupport.com. Twitter.com/HHS Report. Facebook as well. Facebook.com/HHS Report. And also, please hit the podcast up on iTunes. Listen to it, subscribe, rate it, all that stuff. We're going to take over the podcast awards one day, but it starts with one listener at a time. So that can be you right now. Thank you very much. I love y'all, man. Peace.
Gunshot, gonna lick a boy. Yo, bitch, she said I'm hot. Man, I told her I agree. She gon' really think I'm hot if I told her my degrees. Pull up in that hard top, showing off my keys. Graduate school of hard knocks. I could show you my degrees. Couple A, B, C's. Bad bitch, double D's. Poppin' E, I don't give a F. Told you I'm a G, A, S, A, P. Stevie got it on his sleeve, but I got it on my chest. My nigga, this is what I breathe. Inhale, exhale, cocaine. X pills, import, export, Harlem catching wreck still. So mommy show me how that neck feel. Later show me how the rest feel. For now just chill.
This is the way to go, this is the way we roll. Cause every day we gotta make some. This is the way to go, this is the way we roll. Cause every day we gotta make some.
Young crack, gunshot, gonna lick a boy. Gunshot, gonna lick a boy. Gunshot, gonna lick a boy.